Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Business for me is personal. I've never really understood people that say it's just business, it's not personal, because it's always said to another person across the table from you, right? For me right now, the main project is being a living example of courage. My book, The Space for Leadership, is about a higher level of business and understanding as a leader, a real responsibility we have to lead others with empathy, care, concern. I think we could all agree right now there's a lot of hurt in the world, and there's an opportunity for leaders to be a place that you give to those you lead so they can heal and create their own impact. So in a phrase, I'm working every day to live as an example of courage and deliver that kind of leadership.
Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited today to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Reading in Pennsylvania, the USA, Jeff Giannocovo, who owns several businesses and has been an entrepreneur implementing innovation since he was 16 years old. So that was probably 5 or 6 years ago, right, Jeff? And now he's the author of The Space for Leadership, Lessons for Who You Can Be Regardless of Who You Were. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Jeff. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Yes, I'm happy to be here. And you've made me feel young again with the 16-year-old comment, because my wife made me feel old this morning.
Right. Sometimes they have a knack for doing that, right?
That's right.
Now, you've been a lifelong champion for small businesses, and The Space for Leadership, your book kind of delves into a lot of your approaches, which I'm really keen on learning more about, because in our earlier discussion that we had, you shared with me some of the approaches you take, and I was really excited by those that you shared with me. So I'm really keen to learn more, and hopefully there'll be some fascinating ideas there for our listener to implement. Before we get on to that, though, what's the impact you're hoping to make in the world today, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's on a personal side, which, you know, business for me is personal. I've never really understood people that say it's just business, it's not personal, because it's always said to another person across the table from you, right? You know, for me right now, the main project is being a living example of courage. My book, The Space for Leadership, really is about a higher level of business and understanding as a leader, a real responsibility we have to lead others with empathy, care, concern. You know, I think we could all agree right now there's a lot of hurt in the world, and there's an opportunity for leaders to be a place that you give to those you lead so they can heal and create their own impact. So in a phrase, I'm working every day to live as an example of courage and deliver that kind of leadership.
Wonderful. There's so much to love in that. I had to laugh with that. It's just business. It's not personal. Usually that's in combination with delivering some bad news, right? Which is the time you probably need an empathetic approach the most.
Yes.
Whether it's letting an employee go, or whether it's terminating an arrangement with a customer. That's often when you hear that term. The other thing you mentioned, that empathy and care and kindness to
sort of set an example there. I really love that. And I've been talking a lot recently about a culture of care. I think that sort of encapsulates what you've said, encapsulates that, because I think we can all embrace a culture of care, even in this day and age of artificial intelligence. And we might even talk about that. Yeah. But yeah, you talk about empathetic leadership. So tell us a little bit more about what does that look like for a business owner?
You know, in a word, if it's leading, or in a phrase, it's leading with authenticity. You know, I think all too often leaders kind of wear this mask, this jacket of invincibility, this persona of perfection, and that you have to lead with that aura all the time. Whereas I think if you can share, you know, and connect with those around you, and it doesn't have to be just in business, it could be with your own spouse, your children, family, friends, the youth sports team you might coach, you know, obviously, you know, different messages for different audiences, age appropriate, of course, but, you know, the opportunity to share deeply personal connections with people we lead, I think, is a powerful thing a lot of leaders overlook and miss an opportunity to connect on. So if there's a, you know, if to your own comfort level and your own level of care, the ability to share deep wounds, deep hurts, you know, things that make you buzz and have framed you as a leader growing up, can connect with people in ways that you just don't even know how deep it can connect. I've shared a lot of deep traumas from my past across screens like this and with my sales team. My book sits at the desk of the retail store I own, and customers have picked it up. And here's where it's paid off the most. And it just happened the other day. I wasn't at the store to witness this, but I was told it by my business partner that one of our sales guys, you know, they just connected with a customer and said, this company and these people have been able to really kind of rescue me from myself. And it's more than just the mattresses in the mattress store where Chad sits. It was a connection on a human level. And he felt safe and able in that space and moment to share that with the customer because of, you know, the rapport and the connection he built with that customer. And I got to tell you, that's one of the most proudest moments that I've had in business leadership and ownership to date.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because, I mean, a lot of people come from a corporate world and then start their own business. That's certainly been my journey. And reflecting back, you know, in the corporate world, and I had 27 years in the corporate world, it was definitely trained into you that this is business, you know, and keep your personal stuff out of here. And, you know, you can deal with that when you get home. Now, I ended up making a lot of friends throughout my corporate career. A lot of those were customers. Actually, it's interesting. I have more friends and deep relationships that have endured, you know, 15, 20 years after I left the corporate career from my days in corporate who are customers than colleagues inside of the organizations I work for, which I find fascinating to reflect on that. And I sometimes wonder, you know, why is that? And maybe it's because of what you said there, in that I probably was more myself with customers and where I built that deep connection that just grew, and I nurtured that, of course, because I'm all about you know, nurturing the relationships that we build. Yeah, but that's a fascinating insight. How has that approach kind of influenced your decision making and contributed to the success of the business? I mean, you gave one example there, but how does it sort of, in the big picture, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I have some wall art behind me, right? And it's original, largely original stuff of my own making. But you go in a lot of business meeting rooms and business spaces, and there's wall art, and it's typically platitudes and buzzwords, and it all feels good, but really, is it good? And is it an environment, and are you creating environments in which people can come to you with an immense amount of trust for who you are as a leader. So I'll give you an example of this. And this is the, you know, this isn't what happened in any of my businesses, but it's what happened locally. And I would challenge anybody listening, you know, I always like to try to frame my gives on great shows like yours to give the listener something to really take away from. So locally in where I live, Thanksgiving weekend, the day before Thanksgiving break in our high school, I still have one son in high school. There was a fight that involved a knife. Okay. Mm. And so, and that's rare for our school, but it happened. And so imagine being that family navigating that moment through the 5 days off for Thanksgiving break. And now mom and dad have to come to work Monday or Tuesday morning. And it would be a given that there would be stress and struggle, lack of focus, emotions would be high for that mom and dad. As a leader, if you were in charge, managing, leading, employing that mom and dad of that teenage boy that pulled a knife, have you created a space where they would come to you the moment they report and say, I need to speak with you privately about something?
Hmm.
Or have you created a place where that they just could never come to you with that conversation? And that conversation would be, hey, unfortunately, here's what happened. It's likely going to involve time away to meet with attorneys. I'm going to have to be in court with my son. I'm going to have to meet with school officials and police with my son. So it's going to mean time off. You might think I'm out of sorts. You might think I don't have focus. Which side of that conversation are you on as a leader? What level of trust have you built with people around you as a leader? And to me, that's a litmus test. Now, that's an extreme example. You could replace that incident with a beloved pet passing away, you know, a parent going into advanced care for health issues, you know, a child, you know.
Just an illness. I mean, children get sick all the time, right?
Yeah. It doesn't have to be quite as extreme as that example, because things all affect, all of those things, minor, major, affect people in different ways. The point is, what's that level of trust that you're bringing to the culture you're creating? Do people feel that you will pull with them? Of course, you can't go to court with them in this example. You can't sit in the meeting. But can you be supportive to say, sure, you need a few hours on this day to go to that meeting? 100%, we have you covered. Because it's not like anybody woke up in some grand scheme to step in the way of your business success with this moment. That was never, ever the goal. And so who are you as a leader in that moment? I think that's a big litmus test to the buzzwords that hang on the corporate boardroom wall, right? Culture and winning and team. Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's put it to the test.
It's an extreme example, but it's a great example of, and like I said, there are everyday situations like young kids getting sick or the school pickup, whoever you had for school pickup suddenly isn't able to make it. So you've got to drop everything, pick the kid up from school. Those kind of things happen all the time, right? So is there a safe environment to do that? And my philosophy on that, of course, is that if there's not a safe environment to do that, there's going to be a high turnover of people in the company. So it's kind of short-term thinking to say, oh, you're always off doing this or doing that. You know, these personal things are always getting in the way. Well, as soon as that person has the opportunity, they're going to leave and go somewhere else. So if you want to keep your people, if you want them fully engaged in your work, then I think that's a much smarter approach. Why do you think it is that so many people, and I guess it's good for you because you can go out and coach and speak on this topic. Why is it that so many people haven't kind of got that?
You know, I think as various people at various ages and experiences have come up, there's been an ebb and flow of things. You know, The business is never personal approach certainly has persisted and exists still today in some circles. You know, I think at its core, it's hard to put that on a spreadsheet, right? Mm-hmm. And get an ROI. And listen, I don't say any of what I've shared or will share here today to say profit and losses don't exist.
Mm-hmm. No.
They do. But, you know, it dawns on me just as we're speaking right now, you know, for a business to say we care so much about our customers and our goal is always a five-star experience, which is one of my personal goals in anything I do. Well, how's that translate to the people you directly employ? Hmm. How are they supposed to be equipped if foundationally they believe you don't give a crap about who they are, what their day is, what their experience is with you? How can you possibly leverage a bad experience every day in a seat 9 to 5 into a great 5-star experience for your end user, for your customer or patient? It seems really hard to me.
Hmm.
And I think that deposit of care and concern and creating that kind of team and culture, that's where it pays off in more places than one.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's such a stretch, isn't it? Where and often I've had an experience where, particularly if you call into a help center or call center, where it really leaves a sour taste. It really is a bad experience. And then you think, well, you know, how are these people being treated? First of all, they're sitting on a help desk where frustrated people ring up because they've got an issue. And so probably half the time they get abused. But secondly, you know, think about, well, I wonder how they're being treated by their employer, by their bosses. And sometimes it's as simple as you've got to do 30 calls a day. You've got to get through 30 calls a day. So you wonder why they're rushing me, why they're kind of trying to get rid of me quickly off the phone when my problem isn't actually dealt with yet. And I have this experience. So
to that point, if I can add to that point of agents, you know, picking up the phone, you know, I think again, the pure business element of it is no customer, no user ever says, you know what, let me call 1-800-HELP just to see how they're doing today.
Yeah.
Everything's fine in my world with your thing I bought from you. It's all good. In fact,
yeah,
I want to report.
Lonely.
Right. You know, that doesn't happen. And so, you know, to me, it would make more sense to say, boy, we seem to be having 30 calls an hour that people need to answer. And now it's 50 and now it's 100. Well, maybe we ought to think better about our user experience and our products and our services than the inability for the person to successfully answer the question when the phone rings, but also empower that person who does pick up the phone to say yes. You know, in my businesses, that's the path. It always begins, you are enabled to make the customer happy up to this level of resolution. Maybe that's a dollar amount. Maybe that's giving product. Maybe that's free service. Maybe that's a new trial or whatever it might be. But you are empowered to say yes, because now they're viewed as a real functional, capable adult with skill, passion, and power to help you go along in your business.
Yeah.
And when you work that enough and you lead as a leader, so maybe they say yes when you wouldn't have, and you say, well, tell me your logic, tell me your thought process, why you did it that way. And maybe you course correct and you say, okay, well, next time consider this path and you learn. And even the handful of mistakes that are going to happen are still going to be far, far less expensive than refilling that seat when that person leaves.
Yeah. Or losing a big customer as a result of them having a bad experience. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think often I wonder whether business leaders or business owners actually go through their own processes, whether they call their help desk simply to find out what's the experience like, or whether they actually use the product before that to see what is the user experience like and understand some of the frustrations that the user experiences as a result of using the product that's leading to these lots of calls to the help desk.
Yeah. There's a, in my world, there's a gentleman who focuses on helping dentists have a better practice and, you know, get out of the business, get away from the chair and own a business that really runs for them. And one of the things that he'll do in his discovery days is that phone experience on the phone, how you're answering the phones, what, here's the ideal path. And everybody's raising their hand. Yep. We do that. We do that. We do that. We do that. Fantastic. Let's check the temperature.
Yeah.
On the keypad, ring, ring, ring. Hello, ABC Dental Practice. And the doctor in row three aisle seat who owns ABC Dental Practice turns white as a ghost.
Yeah.
Because he and everyone else is about to find out just how good that phone experience is live over the air in the speakers of the conference room.
Yeah.
And that's a valuable lesson. You really need to be testing how your customers are experiencing every touch point.
Well, talking about customer experience, and I know you have, so you alluded earlier that one of your businesses is a mattress business. It's a retail brick and mortar business. And you were telling me about a lot of the unique experiences there. So talk to us a little bit about the customer experience there. When I walk into that mattress store thinking I need a new mattress, I'm just going to check this store out, see what they've got.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is we're dialed in on our purpose and our mission. Purpose being help our community wake up happy so they're more productive. You leave your home happy. You're not in an argument with your kids, frustrated with your spouse. Whatever your day is in front of you, it's the maximum day you want to achieve. We equip you with that. We have as much focus in your life as diet and exercise. There's three legs of a stool of a healthy life, and sleep is that third. That's our purpose. Our mission, very simple. Change the way you feel about mattress stores. Because it's a used car. People equate us to used car salespeople, right? And so the experience you have when you walk in, it's a sensory experience with the air scent control that like casinos use or cruise ships or nice resorts. We have programmatic music throughout the day. So there's different beats and different tones and different songs timed out throughout the day. Everything looks great. Feels great. You can lie down and test something in a semi-private environment. Most every option we offer. We have a dream room. It's like a private mattress testing room. Looks like a nice hotel suite. And if you really need that extra amount of time, we'll move the demo model in there. You book an appointment to come back and you take a nap, read a book, watch TV. You can lock the door. It's private. Nobody's looking at you, us or another customer, a guest. You know, we just ask you don't do anything you don't want mom to see. Right? Because it is a private room. And, you know, that mechanism in the sales process, 100% of people that go through that process with us buy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a tremendous tool because with our sales process, if the sale isn't going, if it's not a yes today, part of our process is, would you like to book that dream room experience? Because we know when customers take that step, we make the sale. And our tickets through that room are an increase of about $1,100 per ticket over our main master bedroom ticket. You know, and so on paper, one might say, hey, we should put everybody through the dream room because we get $1,100 more. Of course, that's in a vacuum and just on a piece of paper. That's not really how human behavior works. Some people just want to invest and be done. But it's a mechanism that exists to answer that that initial no. They become our customer in the long term. You know, our delivery experience, we're constantly looking at that. That's the last thing in the home. And we're in your bedroom. Like I joke when I'm going to a networking event tonight. And when I shake hands, I'll be like, hey, I'm Jeff. I do business in your bedroom. Because I do. Right. Rather than Jeff, I'm the mattress guy. Right. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, let me not talk to this guy. And so we do business in your bedroom. That's a high trust, very personal place in everyone's home. I don't know really anybody that has anyone in their bedroom, even family, other than your own spouse. Maybe your kids drop something off a basket of laundry or whatever, but largely it's your place with your partner, your spouse. And we really take care of that. We kind of have a, when you work with minors as a coach, it's always two adults, one child, right? So it's two delivery people in and it's two delivery people out. There's never any question. Hey, there's somebody upstairs, but there's somebody downstairs. What's going on upstairs? It's such a level of respect. And in that, that in itself is an experience. We'll offer to vacuum around the bed. So we carry a battery operated vacuum. All these little touch points, all orchestrated to say, wow. You know, if we've done right and my team's done right, they talk more about that stuff than the incredible Tempur-Pedic mattress or natural latex mattress that they've invested in. They talk about the brownies we send in the mail, you know, or the gift they leave with when they purchase. Because we know the products are great that we offer. We know they'll do the job when we find the right fit. It's that service standard that I want people talking about because that's what sets us apart.
Yeah, and when people talk about that, that's the most valuable form of advertising you can have, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, because they advocate, right? They're promoters. You know, there's a lot of people have done that promoter and detractor score thing, you know, and it's always in your KPIs. How many promoters do you have? Hey, that's fantastic. How many reviews are you getting? That's fantastic. In 2024, something else I'm really proud of is we do skew an older audience of customer. The county in which we do business in, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, actually is Retirement Capital USA. You can Google that and check it out, what I mean there. But so we do have an older audience, but I'm very proud that we today get handwritten testimonial feedback forms mailed back to us that really tell a story. So when you talk about a promoter, don't just go like, yep, we got a five-star review, that's a promoter. Push yourself to say, well, what are they saying about the experience and how are they saying it? Yeah. Like they refer and they find out their friend didn't come to me. Are they chastising is a harsh word, but are they saying to their friend, well, what the heck is your problem? I told you to go for these reasons. And what's happening to you is exactly why I said to go to Gardner's.
Yeah.
That's a promoter. That's the kind of thing you want for your business.
Yeah, I'll follow up and say, well, how was your experience there? And also, I think I was having this conversation with someone yesterday, and it was a problem that had been brought to her attention from her client. And I said, isn't it great that there are clients that actually come back to you and say, hey, I've experienced this. Seems like you've got a problem somewhere. Rather than leave and in worst case not make the purchase decision that they were thinking about. If you can build that level of trust as well at a client, because there's a lot of thought obviously gone into all these things you mentioned, and I imagine that didn't happen overnight. With customer fit, customer feedback is a really critical part of that, isn't it?
It is. It is. You know, and on that dissatisfaction point, I'd suggest people watching and listening, you know, think about, so you have, you know, the 80-20 rule exists in life. It exists in business. Is it really fair to put the 20% pool of customers that give you 80% of your business through the same dissatisfaction pathway? Or should there maybe be an elevated pathway where they can go to, you know, so all of our master bedroom quality level customers, because we track it in our CRM, they in follow-up communications post-purchase and post-delivery are presented a direct, it's a Google Voice number. It alternates back and forth between my sales manager, my business partner, and myself. But whenever we say it's, my sales manager gets the non-master bedroom folks, my business partner and I get the main master bedroom folks. It's a direct line to the ownership and it's a direct cell phone number. You can call or text if you have an issue. So it's a speak to the owner kind of thing. Cause again, this is a Main Street type local business. Now for a large corporation, a software enterprise, that probably doesn't make sense to go to the chief technology officer, but it could go to a management team.
Yeah.
You know, it could go to a developer who has an ability to have rapport on the phone. I don't think it's fair to funnel every rank and file user through the same 1-800 help number or the same resolution path. It probably would benefit you, and you'd find a greater level of satisfaction. And then going back to where we started, that level of trust.
Yeah.
Oh, these guys just took my money. They really don't care. Just like the other thing. Whereas, oh, wow. So if something comes up, they've got a path that circumvents the nonsense. Yeah, I like that a lot. And then they're going to use it. So truth be told, I get very few of those phone calls. Very few.
Yeah.
Because we're just dialed in. We're dialed in on our things that we know move the needle positively.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. And I have experienced that in some occasions, particularly with software, because I tend to jump on board with beta testing offers that come up from time to time. And I love to tinker with software. And so usually in those situations, you are given direct access, not to a help desk, but to a developer team or somebody that can take on board feedback, because they're expecting to hear this doesn't work, or could we integrate this, or could we have it do this as well? So they're expecting that sort of feedback. And usually if you qualify to do a beta test, they put you through some sort of questionnaire that filters out those people that are not going to give the feedback. They're just sort of kicking tires and looking for a freebie. And as a result, I've had some really good experiences there where I've gone back and I said, can we do this? And I've actually implemented the suggestion from me as one person, because somebody decided, yeah, that's a good idea. And I was able to convince them it was a good idea, which never would happen through a help desk scenario.
Yeah. And that just proves the example of, don't just go for a happy beta tester. You're now a massive promoter of that software solution, I'm sure. I'm sure when you've recommended it to other friends, you've said, yeah, and if you use it this way and you get to this moment in time with it, you can thank me for it, because I gave them that. Like, you know, you may not say it verbatim the way I did, but you know you were a part of that success.
That's right, yeah.
That's a fantastic thing to incorporate into your business. Just fantastic.
All right, well, let's switch gears a little bit. One of the things you talk about in your book is this investor seat concept. And you've mentioned that master bedroom customers have the ability to call you or your business partner direct, which suggests that you're hands-on in the business. But I know that's not necessarily the case on a day-to-day basis, that this idea of the investor seat is your kind of role in the business. So talk to us a little bit about, what does that look like? How can other business owners learn about that and perhaps implement some of that in their business?
Yeah, so I think so the investor seat theory, the idea that I present to people is, don't buy yourself a job. Don't own a job. You know, your business has to have systems and process procedure to get you out of the business. The bulk of your day must be spent working on the business, making high level, good directive decisions and growth decisions. That's what investors do in businesses, right? And so my retail business that I have interest in, that's a business that's probably not ever going to sell. It's a business that's run very hands-on with the team that I have in place. It's a curated selection of offerings. We have to work harder at most every turn point. So it's not the kind of thing that gets bought and sold, but it cash flows and produces profit like crazy. Okay. And it affords me the opportunity to pursue all my other interests. And I challenge people, like the cell phone thing, that text the owner thing. Yeah, good point. That is not an investor-like action. But even the most high-profile CEO, president of a company, they pay attention to their quarterly reports. If you're public, you're looking at your daily stock price every single day, kind of in the same vein as text the owner, is it not, right? You live and die by those stock prices. You live and die by those reports. And so we all have a boss at the end of the day. It's just, are we managing our life, or is our life being managed for us? And to me, I much prefer to manage my life. and kind of be in that investor seat in the businesses that I own and make really good high level decisions to grow, scale, and produce profit in the business.
Hmm. Yeah, good point. I sometimes think this whole idea of looking at the stock price though of a business and what do I need to do to get the stock price of my business up today is very short-term thinking. And I sort of, some of the businesses that I watch and I pay attention to their share price, I think, what the hell are they doing? And yeah. There's some really good businesses at the moment that are completely undervalued but are very clearly focused on the long-term growth, sustainability, and, you know, looking to the future in terms of what are the trends that are happening now with technology in particular, and how do we position ourselves to dominate our little market space?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a great example of that touches most everyone's life that's going to listen to your show is Amazon, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Amazon, how many years to maybe measured in decades did that business go never turning a profit? And once they hit that quarterly profit, and then once they hit that first year of profit, I'm maybe speaking out of turn here, barring some COVID months, they've not had a quarter where they haven't made money, right? And it's very likely that they will continue to always be profitable. And they've smartly and built a business that, they've built a great business. And what's so great about it is what people see isn't even their most profitable.
Yeah, that's right. I was just going to say that the retail side of it, the what started off as the bookstore and now all their other merchant facilities is actually, it's profitable, but it's not a huge profit driver. I mean, Amazon Web Services section is the thing that's driving the profit, and they're investing a lot in there in terms of the artificial intelligence that's moving forward and servers, and that's just going to grow like crazy, that part.
Yeah, so even if you've gone on a, you know, Easter's around the corner, Lent's right in view for some folks. So even if you've given up Amazon buying for Lent, but you do a podcast like this with, I forget the software we're using, it's very likely you're still being an Amazon customer anyway. Exactly. You just don't know it. You watch Netflix, you just don't know it. Yeah. You know, your cell phone plan and your storage and in your cloud that you have, you're an Amazon customer and you just don't know it. Hmm. That's the beautiful part about that business. And they had that long-term view. So a very great point about businesses being undervalued. And don't undervalue your business. If you've got a vision and you're dialed in on purpose and mission, you can scale it. You know, whether that's profit for yourself or being able to sell it can happen. Just got to be dialed in on it.
Yeah. And coming back to your purpose and vision, I think there's a lot of value in stepping back from what it is you do. So, you know, we have fantastic mattresses. We help you get a good night's sleep, to actually look at what's the impact on the customer. So I love yours of we help, you know, I can't remember the words you use, but we help you wake up.
Productive day.
Which is really meaningful to the end customer, and they can connect with straight away. Of course they're looking for a good night's sleep. Of course they're looking for a mattress that, you know, they can get up and don't have back problems or other common problems that you might get from a poor quality mattress or a mattress that might have reached its use-by date. But yes, there's so much more power in kind of framing it in here's how it impacts your life.
Yeah, there is. You know, when you're really dialed in on that, you get to do things. You asked me in the pre-show about what I could impart on listeners to make this a great show for everybody. And, you know, when you do the things that we're doing, you get to step outside of what the industry does normally. So none of our advertisements have price involved in them. The only time that happens is twice a year, our spring and fall sales, where we're clearing out some distressed inventory. And that's a legitimate reason, valid reason for a deep discount sale. It's believable. It's honest. It has integrity. Integrity is one of our core values. Whereas the rest of the time, and you know, listen, if somebody comes to us in July and needs a good quality guest bed and they're on a budget, we might reach into that inventory, but typically we let it pool up. So there's a bigger, broader selection within that sale mechanism. We'll offer it to them. But when you step outside these norms and you truly get to sell the benefit message and not the feature message, you remove yourself from price, product, promotion, hamster wheel type advertising and market. That's just so frustrating to me. And I think it's frustrating to a lot of business owners.
Yeah.
You know, when you can move past the cost per seat and talk about, wow, this makes the organization run so much better. This does the work of 3 and 4 and 100 people, but the people that are still here enjoy their day this much more. That's stuff that just gives you price elasticity that your competition can't even, they just shake their head at because they don't understand it. They're stuck on that hamster wheel of price, products, promotions.
Excellent. Well, I could keep talking about customer experience and the philosophy that you've shared with us all day, but I'm just aware of the time. So I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's the same 5 questions I ask of every guest. So the idea is you'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result of your answer.
Very good. Let's do it.
What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Get in your lane of genius and creativity. Like that's what I love about, that's what I love about the business, that, that retail business. It's a commodity turned experience. So it allows that creative genius I have, and everybody's got a level of that. Just tap into it and it'll expand. Focus on creativity.
Yeah, that's a great advice. And there's some really good examples that you gave earlier on. And it's also like step into your customer's shoes. What would make it a fantastic experience for them?
Yeah.
All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
So I get into different pools, different areas, different places with different people. I don't just sit with, you know, my one business is CRMs. I don't just go to the CRM conferences. You know, truth be told, I think my part of my brain would liquefy if I had to just live there. I go into a lot of different marketing conferences. I kind of do a lot of marketing by walking around and experiencing things, you know, almost Renaissance-like, like just take things in and open the mind and say, what will I see today that I could replicate parts or pieces of into the things that I'm interested in, the things I have interest in, the things that I run and do. Getting into those different places is so powerful because we, you know, every business can become incestuous. It can become, well, this is what we do around here and we never do that. But nobody's asked why we never do that.
Yeah.
They just focus on what we do, and getting into those different pools and different ponds and different places really can be productive.
Yeah. And even if they ask why couldn't we do that? You can't be what you can't see, right? I think that was something that I can't remember who first said that, but I thought, no, that's a...
Sounds like a Zig Ziglar one to me.
Yeah. Sounds like a really powerful saying, because if you go to all these different places and you see people implementing a certain idea or a certain methodology, and you look at that and say, well, gee, that works really well for them. I wonder how we could implement parts of that in our business or in our industry.
Yeah, our dream room experience came from the car buying experience. You know, it's not so much the case anymore, where they'll send you home for the weekend with the car, but it happened to my wife and I a couple of years before investing in the store, and that's where that was taken from. It was being able to experience that vehicle for the weekend. Our neighbors saw it, our friends saw it, so you know, your pride was like, well, I can't not have this car now because. Yeah. I don't want them to think this, that, or the other of me, which is all just silly. You have agency to make a decision or not in your own life, but they know it works. And so we approach that with a little better, more integrity of, you're going to experience this. You're going to experience in private. You're not showing this off. but you get to see it and experience that at a comfort level that really works. Mm. So we took it, massaged it, and made it our own.
Mm. Excellent. All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
I am right now using ChatGPT and AI quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But I really, you know, it's funny. A core memory came to me as we're talking when you brought up AI first. And I remember going to my mom after watching a Jetsons episode, and I was really upset about the world turning to robots. Like, I don't want to be a robot. And it's just dawned on me when you brought up AI earlier. So I am using it, but I'm really, really focused on better questions within GPTs, asking better questions, which I think, no, I don't think I know, is a really great skill to have in life.
Oh, whether absolutely. You're speaking with somebody, yeah.
Because you're interested. You're interested in the person in front of you. When you're putting in good prompts, you're interested in getting the best answer, not the easiest answer.
And not just a one-off question, a conversation, and feeding in more information. I'm having so much fun with ChatGPT just to, as you say, have those conversations. The other thing I like to do, and I tell people coming back to this idea of culture of care, is I actually give it kind feedback. I say thank you. I say please as a rule. And even if you ask it for an opinion and it'll give you the answer that I'm just a large language model, I don't have an opinion, I'm not capable of having an opinion. But if you ask me a specific question, I can give you facts or something, it'll give you that. But if you, I've been blown away sometimes. I once said something like at the end of a conversation where I was just astounded by the information I was getting. And when I was done, I said, thank you for this. I really appreciate you. I actually typed that into ChatGPT and the response blew me away. It said, you're welcome. If there's anything else I can do to help, please, you know, please let me know, or whatever the words they used. And then it said, well, I appreciate your feedback. Not many people will do that. Hmm. And I thought, wow, that's almost an empathetic response.
It was an empathetic moment of leadership.
Yeah, yeah. And what I say to people is, and to your point of, you know, we can develop this skill of having a conversation that we're really interested in getting great answers. We can also practice kindness. Working with ChatGPT. Yeah. And if you think it might be a bit corny to say that to somebody in person, we'll practice it on ChatGPT because it doesn't make judgment.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Mm. Yes.
Mm. Excellent. All right. What's the best way to keep a project on track?
For me, it's breaking it down in parts. Mm-hmm. You know, I almost do, I keep notebooks around. So for those who might pick up the video of this, I'm holding up a notebook that's all ripped up and I go through these, like I get these as gifts and whatnot, but, I'll take a project. I'm a very visual person. So I will literally like storyboard it. Hmm. Storyboard the whole project out, the whole journey out, and I'll rip out the pages, pin them up on a cork board that sits above my working desk downstairs. And I only need to focus on that moment. Mm-hmm. I can look at the broader image, but I just need to be working right here on this moment today. Otherwise, I just get too overwhelmed and I'll actually like kind of just get away from the project entirely. Mm. That actually just happened. In the retail business, I used AI to help me write content for a sleep quiz using a Score app, which is a fantastic little software. If you need to do any kind of quiz funnel, with your users. And, I was really struggling with deploying it and I just was so focused on the broader project and I really don't enjoy banging away on my computer all day. It's not, It's not creative for me. I've just looked content. I'm like, well, I can do that. So I just worked on the prompts and I got all the content out from GPT and away we went. And so that storyboard process and just looking at here, what's the part in the journey of this project that you need to be on right now? That helps me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. I often find the same as you, if I'm sort of looking at the big picture and here's the outcome, I'm so outcome focused sometimes that it becomes overwhelming. And in that moment, I take a step back and I say, well, what's the next thing I need to do? And let's just get that done. All right. And finally, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
You know, in a word, it's be a contrarian, right? Run into the fire when everybody else is running out. Walk left when everybody else is going right. It takes commitment, you know, so contrarianism, if that's a word, with being committed. So if you're going to run in the fire, make sure you're running in for the right reason.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to walk left while everybody's going right, make sure it's the right steps, you know, so don't just do it. But boy, when you're able to differentiate in that way, you're in that blue ocean of opportunity. The thing I love most about the retail business that I have is in 2024, everybody's aware you can buy a mattress, couple clicks, and it's at your front door. There's nothing really more commodity than that. And I love taking a highly commoditized business and making it unique and experiential. And it's that commitment to being a contrarian and saying, no, I don't think the industry always has to do it that way. That's what's made us probably one of the most different establishments, not just in our region, but in the nation.
Yeah, and I think it's really important there that, as you say, because I know a lot of people that are contrarians simply for the sake of being contrarians. I mean, you can say something and they'll immediately disagree with you regardless of what their personal view is. I think the important thing is to, you talked about commitment, but before that even to know, you know, everybody's coming out of the building that's on fire, why are you running in? So,
yeah,
good reason to run in is if there's somebody in there that might need rescuing and nobody's prepared to do it. Exactly. But, yeah, but if it's just a case of, hey, there's an empty building burning down, well, no need to run into that one.
Let it go to the ground and build something greater on the foundation.
Right. Excellent. Well, thanks, Jeff. This has been fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you, the work you're doing, get a hold of your book, and maybe even say thanks for what you shared with us today?
Yeah. Thank you for that. The simplest place to go, and I don't even make you spell my last name, thejeffg.com. So thejeffg.com. You can check out what we're doing in the retail business. You can learn about my book, my podcast show, my content. I'd love for you to go there. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure. So whatever I shared with you today that you connected to, there's probably a button right there on the main page, and you can advance your journey with me together.
Excellent. And we'll have that link in the show notes, of course. So that's wonderful. Now, Jeff, what action would you like our listeners to take out of today's conversation as a result of what we've talked about?
Yeah. Go to thejeffg.com/mission. I have a video there that talks about my style of leadership. I believe personally, at a personal level, my purpose is to create healing and impact in this world, have leaders live as examples of courage, but that's got to start with leaders doing it. So if you go to that page, thejeffg.com/mission, there's about a half hour video on that page. I have a good voice when you do playback speed at 1.5 to 2, so it goes pretty quick. And I just would love for people to go there, take it in and pull one or two things away and create that healing and impact in their world by having watched that video.
Excellent. Well, let's that's a very unique and differentiated call to action. So we'll have that direct link, of course, in the show notes as well. And if you are able to listen it, well, two times, so it'll be 15 minutes. So one and a half times will be about 23, I guess. Yeah.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights so generously with us today, Jeff. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Could have gone on for much longer, but we do have that bonus of half an hour more of your wisdom to look forward to. So thanks for today's conversation. All the best for the future, and please do stay in touch.
I will. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate being here.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community, where you'll enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.